Blog Talk Radio.
Our roots began in Africa, where we enjoyed self-determination and freedom, which were rooted in our sovereignty. Peace, family. Welcome to Dare to Win, the Us Lifting Us weekly radio program that airs every Thursday evening from 9 p.m. to 10 p.m. Eastern Time. Dare to Win is the place where we have sobering conversation about the economic plight of Black people and the imperative that we build the global economic machinery that will free us and once again put us on the path of making history. We at Us Lifting Us have developed an exact methodology on how to build this global machinery and pass it forward to our children and future generations. If you'd like to join tonight's conversation, please call 929-477-2789. Press the number 1 on your phone when you want to make a comment or ask a question. If you prefer to listen on your computer, go to www.usliftingus.com. Scroll down to the bottom of the homepage, click on the Dare to Win button, then click on Listen Live. At that time, you will be on the Blog Talk Radio site. If you want to get reminders from Blog Talk Radio for upcoming Dare to Win programs, click on the Follow button. ULU members, we have our own social media community. Please join if you have not already done so. There is a Dare to Win group, and we would like to have your feedback on past Dare to Win programs, as well as topic suggestions for future programs. Go to usliftingus.com. You can reach the ULU community through the members only portal. When you register for the ULU community, please use the same name you used when you joined ULU. I am Sister Q, and joining me for this evening's discussion is Brother Shabaka, who, like me, is a member of ULU. This evening's topic is Black health and wellness and the coming apocalypse. Peace, Brother Shabaka. How are you tonight?
Hey, I'm doing good for the apocalypse coming. I'm doing great. How are you doing, sister?
I'm doing great. Thanks for asking. Yes, so, okay, your topic, Black health and wellness, and the coming of the apocalypse seems really, you know, give us something to think about. Are you saying that the end of the world is coming before we even get around to having good health?
No, I'm not saying that. And really, the topic was to have people think and hopefully refer back to their, maybe to their Bible if they, you know, of the Christian persuasion and even of Islamic teaching. But anyway, people are not clear on the word apocalypse, which really came in the book of Revelations in the New Testament, and it really came out of the Greek. People are not also weary or rather knowledgeable of the translations of old texts into new texts, and that even in the translation, meanings and could be lost. And so with this meaning, actually the word apocalypse means revelation. All right, that's why they call it the book of Revelation, all right? And revelation, when you look at it, means to uncover, all right? To uncover which have been covered, all right? All right, and people looked at that as uncovering God's plans to, you know, end the world. No, that's not what it meant. It's just when it's what it means when somebody instructs you as to its meaning in that context. But no, it just means to uncover. So I'm using the term to say black health and wellness through the uncovering of the truth, which is essentially what I mean. Now let's talk about what is the truth. Okay, uncovering the truth, all right? And this is extremely important for those of us who consider ourselves conscious, not to be led by the propaganda and all that other kind of stuff, whether it's on the media and even whether it's maybe sometimes in our synagogues, churches, or mosques. To get to that point, I like to play a clip by a Dr. Philip Buchholz. He's a cancer geneticist. He is testifying before the South Carolina Senate. All right, I'm not going to say what he's going to testify to, but you'll get the sense of it when you hear him. All right, let me play that clip right now for the family.
For those of you don't know me, my name is Philip Buchholz. I'm a I have a PhD in biochemistry and molecular biology. I'm a cancer gene jock. Basically, I do cancer genomics research at the University of South Carolina. And what that means is that I'm kind of an expert on all the ways that the human genome can get fussed with during your lifetime and which of those things cause cancer and which ones don't. Okay. So technically, that means that I'm very, very skilled in the art of DNA sequencing. Okay, I can figure out the sequence of things that I didn't know what I was looking for. And I'm also pretty good, when I say I mean the people in my laboratory, you're not going to hear their names, but there's a group of people that do this excellent work. We're really good at detecting foreign pieces of DNA in places where they're not supposed to be, even if they're low levels. And we used those skills during the pandemic. We invented the COVID test that many of you did, a spit test. Okay, that came out of my lab, because we were really good at that kind of stuff. And so I've earned a fair amount of respect in the state of South Carolina and in this body, because we did a ton of COVID testing in the middle of the night when people were afraid, and we told them, no, you don't have COVID in your home, or yes, you do. So my qualifications to comment on this are both technical and kind of relational in the state of South Carolina. I'll cut to a very narrow theme here, but it does touch on lots of these regulatory issues, and I'll leave it to you to expand on those if you want to. I'll try to stay in this narrow lane of some problems in the Pfizer vaccine as a case study for places in which regulatory oversight could be improved, right? So first of all, let me say that my interpretation of the literature is that the Pfizer vaccine did a pretty good job of keeping people from dying, but it did a terrible job of stopping the pandemic. The early publications showed that it stopped infection, but that only lasted for like a month.
Dr. Berghoff, could you pull the mic a little closer to you? Staff's telling me they're having trouble getting you on the recording.
Okay.
Okay, thank you.
In my professional evaluation of the literature, the Pfizer vaccine did a pretty good job of keeping people out of the cemetery, but it sucked at stopping the pandemic. And it was the best of sucky options that we had. And I still believe that it was deployed mostly in good faith, but there were a lot of shortcuts taken because the house was on fire, and we could do a better job next time from the lessons that we're going to learn here. That's my own personal view of this, but I'm also, my philosophical bent here is, I'm sure many of you have heard of Occam's razor, right? Choose the simplest of explanations. Well, there's another one called Hanlon's razor, which is never attribute malice to that which can be better explained by incompetence. And so I'm trying to be gracious here in many in circumstances. There could be malice underneath, but I'm trying to see just incompetence to be gracious. So the Pfizer vaccine is contaminated with plasmid DNA. It's not just mRNA. It's got bits of DNA in it. This DNA is the DNA vector that was used as the template for the in vitro transcription reaction when they made the mRNA. I know this is true because I sequenced it in my own lab. The vials of Pfizer vaccine that were given out here in Columbia, one of my colleagues was in charge of that vaccination program in the College of Pharmacy, and for reasons that I still don't understand, he kept every single vial. So he had a whole freezer full of the empty vials. Well, the empty vials had a little tiny bit in the bottom of them. He gave them all to me, and I looked at them. We had two batches that were given out here in Columbia, and I checked these two batches, and I checked them by sequencing. And I sequenced all the DNA that was in the vaccine, and I can see what's in there. And it's surprising that there's any DNA in there, and you can kind of work out what it is and how it got there, and I'm kind of alarmed about the possible consequences of this, both in terms of human health and biology, but you should be alarmed about the regulatory process that allowed it to get there. DNA, in my view.
All right. Let me break this down if it wasn't clear to the family. In other words, mm-hmm. he sequenced what was left of vials that had been used in order to inoculate people. And what he found, which shouldn't have been in there, all right, was plasmid DNA. There shouldn't have been any DNA in there, okay? Now, he's an apologist. He's saying that Pfizer, in his view, didn't intentionally contaminate their own product. They just was incompetent. Now, how long has Pfizer been on this earth? How can it be incompetent?
Right. Exactly.
They knew exactly what was in it. They just didn't tell anybody. Remember now, they are immune from any kind of liability or prosecution as a consequence of injury that might be sustained as a result of taking their vaccine, so-called. All right.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I want mm-hmm. you to listen to Sister Q and family, to one of his colleagues. All right. This is a woman by the name of Dr. Jancy Lindsay. She's a colleague of his, all right, have basically the same
okay.
credentials. I want you to listen to her account of what she thinks took place.
FDA. I just sent them emails and said, hey, you should look in this.
Okay. Okay, thank you so much. Next is Dr. Jancy Lindsay.
In fact, she followed his presentation.
Okay.
Hope you can. Yes.
Many scientists about checking for this months and months and months ago. None of them would do it. I spoke at the U.S. Senate in December of.
Got to listen a little bit carefully because she's away from the mic. She seemed to be a little upset. She's away from the mic. She's trying to get her slides checked out. And she's away mm-hmm. from the mic, so she sounds a little bit like she's in the background. You will hear her soon, to be very clear.
Okay.
22 about the risk of this being passed to our children because of if we reverse transcribed simply from the RNA before we knew that there was DNA in the shots. As soon as I...
All right, now I want to comment on this because she's saying the fear she had with the RNA that it would be reverse transcriptite. Now, what that means is that the RNA can revert back to DNA, and then the DNA will seek the environment of which DNA is contained in, and that's you, the nucleus. All right? That's before she found out about the contamination. I'll let her go on.
Okay.
Found out there was DNA in the shots. I went all over every social media platform I could get to and started ringing the alarm bell. Exactly. You don't have to play that. At this point, I have little time, so I'm going to follow up. Just show the one slide.
The one there slide.
So I disagree with Dr. Bulk-Holson that I think that this is the most dangerous platform that has ever been released on mankind. That is very easy to see in the VAERS database where you have more deaths in just a couple months after the rollout than you have in the past 30 years for all the other vaccines combined. You would have to shrink that and go up. So there we go. So these are all the other vaccines for the past 30 years combined. And this is what happened. During COVID, the deaths from vaccines. Do you see where it is?
Well, she is showing in her slide all of the accumulated deaths that have resulted from vaccines over the past 20, 30 years, all right? And then she showed, to the Senate, the South Carolina Senate, what happens in terms of deaths when COVID vaccine was launched. I let it go on.
Okay.
Over 35,000 deaths. Typically, you would get no more than 200 deaths in a year for all 30 vaccine or for all of the vaccines combined. This is the past 30 years of deaths from vaccines reported into the VAERS database. You've already heard earlier that this represents only 1 to 13% of the cases that are normally reported. This is a safety signal. This is a safety signal. This is the platform itself, okay? In the clinical trials, we saw death. We definitely had death. That was using process one without the contamination, okay? What may not have been clear is that the shots tested on the people in the clinical trials were vastly different than the shots tested or given to people released on the population. I'm short on time, so I'm trying to fit this in. Basically, people were given in the clinical trial a clean shot. Everybody else was given these contaminated shots. Every single vial that's been tested by every scientist around the world is contaminated with these plasmids. And some are contaminated. When Kevin McKernan first tested the vials, he found that one of the vials contained up to about 30% of the nucleic acid material was in fact DNA. So this is not some residual contamination that's carrying over. This is significant contamination. Why does that matter? Gene therapy was never brought to market, even though it's been over 40 years in development, because in the past it caused latent cancers that developed 2 to 4 years after these were given, because it caused lethal autoimmune reactions. Even when you were producing human proteins, not viral proteins, not bacterial proteins that you are displaying on the surface of yourself. Think about the logic of this. In traditional gene therapies, and these are gene therapies, they would be classified as gene therapies. In traditional gene therapies, you send in a genetic message to make a missing protein. That protein is identical to the protein that should have been in your body, but you're missing. This time we're sending in a sequence and asking it to make a piece of a viral protein, and we're displaying it on ourselves, and then our body is attacking it and killing those cells. It doesn't stay in your arm. They said it would stay in your arm. It goes to every single cell in your body, every tissue in your body. It goes to your brain. It goes to your bone marrow. where then your body is able to attack these cells.
Now, I want to stop here again and try to point out to the family if they weren't clear in what she was saying. She's saying that gene therapy, and that essentially means to put a gene into your body, but the gene they put into your body is to create what was essentially missing, all right, in your body, all right, as a human being. In other words, in order to correct some of the problems that you have, and they can associate it with the problems that occur with some malady within the gene, all right, they're able to create what is necessary to supplement and put a corrective measure in there in which you would fully express. Now, what this is doing is to put the gene of a virus into your body, and therefore what is created is a spike protein, all right, because what the gene is supposed to do is send the messenger to the ribosomes within your cell. The cell creates the necessary ingredients, all right, and then what they send is a protein. That's what they're supposed to create. The protein is foreign, so the gene sees, I mean, your body sees, your immune system sees that it's foreign, and say, no, this something is wrong, and it begins to attack your body. Now, she says it doesn't, and I have stuff going way back that says that it does not stay in your arm. It doesn't stay in that muscle, you know, in your shoulder. It goes right to the blood system, and the blood system, remember, family, it circulates. It circulates throughout the entire body, including the brain, heart, lungs, everything, all right? And you have these receptors, all right, which the spike protein latches onto throughout your circulatory system. Now I want to pick up where she says, and this becomes a little bit more important. She was really emotional. I had to stop. She says a lot more, but I had to stop.
President, what Philip did not touch on is that there are sequences within these plasmids. I personally feel that this is an intentional. I believe that there is nefarious intent, and I'm going to tell you why. And it's something that he didn't touch on.
Philip didn't give up the info.
Excuse me. There are SV40 sequences within the plasmid.
Now, I want to stop here. She calls him Philip, you know, because they're close. They know each other. And then she later on tells, you know, Dr. Buckhart. All right. So she's emotional about this. And so she's talking to her colleague, you know. And, you know, they probably had many arguments, you know, because he's taking a soft line. And she's taking a hard line because she's serious. She's probably a mother, which is responsible for her seriousness. Let me let her continue.
Okay.
That were not disclosed to the regulators. The SV40 sequences, if you recall, the SV40 virus was a contaminant of the polio vaccines. It is thought that contamination of the virus, which is
That contaminant, she says, was a result of was a contaminant in the polio vaccine. How did it get into SARS-CoV vaccine? Unless somebody knew that.
Exactly.
Oncogenic caused many of the cancers for the next several decades in the people that received these vaccines. Now the whole SV40 virus is not in the shots. But what is in the shots is a special sequence. It's called a nuclear localization sequence, which is in the shots to take the plasmid DNA directly to the nucleus of human cells. It is not needed to grow these in bacteria. You would not have to use this to grow it in bacteria for the purpose that they said it was for, to make lots of copies. This sequence takes the DNA to the nucleus of human cells, where it can then be integrated, or where, as Philip said, it is most likely to be integrated. So all this about there's no DNA in the shots, they will not go to the nucleus, they will not integrate with your DNA, is not true, and they knew it from the beginning because they knew the plasmids were there. That's a problem. There's also an SV40 promoter only designed to be expressed in human cells, not bacteria cells.
All right, I'm going to let her stop here. All right, she goes on and talk. I mean, she lays it out. You can go on the internet if any of the family members that are listening want to get more about that. Her name is Dr. Jancy, J-A-N-C-I, Lindsay, L-I-N-D-S-A-Y, and just talk about the, you know, South Carolina Senate hearing, and, you know, this will come up, as well as her colleague would come up. Now, Sister Q, I'm pointing, and remember now, the topic was to uncover, as opposed to thinking about we're coming towards the end of the world. Well, we could be,
right.
You know, if we don't uncover. All right, but the thing is to uncover. All right, family, I want to ask you this. How many of you heard this? How many of you have seen the testimony? Did your colleagues at work share this information with you? All right. Did your white colleagues share this with you? All right. If you happen to be married to a member of the opposite race, did he or she share this with you? No, I'm saying no, they didn't share this with you. I'm sharing it with you if you haven't heard this before, because both, even the apologist, indicates that it indicates decontamination. She's saying it was deliberate because the contamination was not in the trials, even though the trials killed people, and now they are in every trial that's been in every vial that's been tested after the launching of their vaccine. This is tragic, all right, extremely tragic.
Mm-hmm.
Sister Q, and so, hopefully, I'm sorry. Go ahead, Sister Q. Seem like you're getting ready to say something.
No, you go ahead and finish your thought. Go ahead and finish your thought.
Yeah, I'm saying it's tragic just for the mere fact of DNA, and you know, people are not necessarily, I'm not that familiar. I mean, that's not my area, but I can read.
Mm-hmm.
I have been in the science field, but not that particular science, all right? And usually when you read papers, they basically say the same thing. You know, you can, you know, I usually go to the executive summary or the abstract portion of, then I go down to the conclusion. All right, that tells me whether if the paper is full of you know what. All right. The abstract tells you what it's saying, and then you go to conclusion, and then if it's interesting, then you try to read through the body. But this thing is, and both scientists agree, all right, that there is DNA contamination in these vials, particularly the Pfizer, all right. And they cut corners. He thinks that they may have cut corners. She says she thinks it's intentional. The reason we may never know, unless this is somehow brought before a court of law, and Pfizer and others are trying to prevent that from happening. Now,
you know, I saw a small clip where someone, I think it was from Pfizer. The lady said that they're being accused of creating a bioweapon, and she said, no, the bioweapon was already created. Our job was to, mass produce it and get it out on the market. These people are saying that the contamination was not deliberate. As the guy says, he's being gracious. He's being way too gracious because, like the lady said, this contamination is not by
right.
Accident.
And I think I remember seeing that. I think it was a testimony. All right, when they was trying to, and this was, in fact, where I saw a testimony of a Pfizer representative. It was in Europe, and I'd like you to quickly listen to. The next two clips that I have, and we'll conclude from ourselves. Remember now, our objective in health and wellness that I'm saying is that we need to uncover, all right? We need to ask questions. We don't need to go away from this. I want you to call in, question me, question anybody, all right? But you got to question because you cannot have faith in the current health care system. The current healthcare system has two things. It will give you a diagnosis, all right, And then after it gives you a diagnosis, it will treat what it diagnosed.
Mm-hmm.
And that is if it correctly diagnosed, you know. And they say mm-hmm. The fourth leading cause of death in the U.S. is misdiagnosis. So, you know, they don't diagnose too well. All right. And then they treat. Now they treat. They don't
mm-hmm.
cure. They treat. I can't make money if I cure you, because you won't come back. You won't pick up those high blood pressure pills. You know, you won't pick up, you know, that sugar diabetes pill. You won't pick up that aspirin. You won't pick up any of that stuff. No, I got to keep you coming back. That's how I make money. All right. And so
mm-hmm.
let's listen
mm-hmm.
to McCullough, who was testifying before the EU Parliament. In fact, it was September 13th. In fact, the others were testifying also in the middle of the month, of this month. All right, so these are testimonies that were going on. So this is Dr. McCullough, all right, testifying,
mm-hmm.
all right, before the European Union Parliament.
These are my observations, and this is my analysis. There have been two waves of injury to the world. The first has been the SARS-CoV-2 infection, which preyed upon the frail and the elderly. And then the second wave of injury now has been the COVID-19 vaccines. The role of the WHO appears to be adverse in both of these. The role of the WHO appears to be operating within a biopharmaceutical complex, a syndicate, a complicated syndicate that has formed over time. It includes the WHO, the United Nations, the World Economic Forum, the Gates Foundation, Rockefeller Foundation, the Wellcome Trust, Gavi, CEPI, the Coalition for Epidemic Preparedness and Innovation, the Gates Foundation, and the WEF formed largely. The Department of State in the United States, the National Institutes of Health, the CDC, the FDA, the MHRA in the UK, PGA in Australia.
He's saying these institutions that he's naming have been compromised. You know, they ain't necessarily working to help you. They working against you from his observation and investigation.
DAFRA in South Africa, the EMA here in Europe. This grouping of non-governmental organizations with governmental public health agencies is operating as a unit. They're carefully coordinated, and the impact has been adverse. At the outset of the pandemic, there was an investigation by the WHO on the origins of SARS-CoV-2. That's when the beginning of the cover-up began. Rear Admiral Brett Gerard in the United States nominated three independent scientists to go to Wuhan and figure out what was going on. We knew at that time, and this has all come out in congressional hearings, that Anthony Fauci, Francis Collins, Jeremy Farrar, who was at the Wellcome Trust, who's now the chief scientist at the WHO, Christian Anderson at Scripps, Edwin Holtz in Sydney, Peter Desick at the EcoHealth Alliance, they all conspired in January of 2020 to cover up what they knew, that the virus was engineered in a joint U.S.-Chinese collaboration in the lab in Wuhan, China. And they deceived the world with 12 subsequent fraudulent papers in the peer-reviewed literature. These were quarterbacked by Jeremy Farrar, who is the chief scientist at the WHO. This is all in the series of reports in the House Select Committee in the United States by the U.S. Congress led by Representative Brad Wenstrup. The WHO has played an adverse role from the very beginning, deceiving the world on the origins of SARS-CoV-2. Doctors like us in clinical practice got behind on this because our governments and agencies like the WHO weren't honest with us. And instead of helping us, or at least getting out of the way in terms of treating patients and saving lives, they got in the way and they impeded our ability to treat patients.
The government got in their way to treat patients. All right, they sanctioned mm-hmm. a number of doctors and prevented. In fact, they had disqualify them from practicing, all right?
Right.
All right, because they were using methods and treatments that were successful without having to go to the vaccine. Now, he's testifying. He's testified here in Congress. He's over there testifying, a couple weeks ago before the European Parliament, all right? Now, he was explosive. Now, I want you to listen to Dr. Martin, who came behind him. And then we'll get into this discussion.
Okay.
Well, the translators are gone, and the live stream is waning, which means that if we just listen to my colleague Matthias, the best thing in the world would be to leave it to you, the people. Now it's up to you to share what clearly, based on the cavernous emptiness we see in all of these spaces, is
basically everybody walked out when he came. It was time for him to speak. All right, he's gonna lay it down on him. This is Dr. David Martin, you know, a white boy. All right, he was over there in Europe. All right, he knows this stuff because it was his organization, his business that Congress got to try to find tracks for people who were trying to hide their money and try to hide their patents. Mm-hmm. They hired him to find that stuff. So he knows, all right? He knows how to do the research, all right? That's what they paid him for, all right?
Mm-hmm.
All right, let's listen to him.
Only going to be heard if you share it. So it feels very appropriate that I should be the one with the quietest voice. But let's let that lion roar, shall we? I'm done talking about COVID, and I'm done talking about SARS-CoV-2, and I'm done for a very simple reason. For 110 years, we, the people of the world, have been lied to. We're a group of very small number of criminal industrial conspirators decided to subordinate the entirety of the human population for the purpose of their sinister plans to enrich themselves while impoverishing and killing the rest of humanity. And I'm done being polite. We've long passed polite. When the words acceptable death rate become part of an industrial norm, we have lost the plot of humanity. And that's not my words. Those were the words of the World Health Organization and of Pfizer and of Moderna when they were given the authorization to begin the process of killing human beings in the interest of advancing their goals. Next slide. And I'm also not going to sugarcoat this. This is a criminal cartel. We are acting as though there's some sort of redeemable quality somewhere in some esoteric layer that somehow or another the World Health Organization must have some salutatory benefit. Well, I'm going to tell you, since its formation in the 1940s, the World Health Organization has been nothing more than a criminal cartel that has a sole and singular intent. And I will show you the document that proves what I'm saying. This is not an allegation. This is actually provable by their own words in their own hands. And they use a four-step process to execute every one of the nefarious plans. They begin by planning an exercise. Then they go to the business of funding that exercise. Then they create the rationale for the thing that they're going to do, and then they deploy and profit from it. And in violation of 15 U.S. Code Section 19, which for those of you listening, coincidentally, started with the Clayton Act in the same year that the World Health Organization in the United States, 1913, the same year the World Health Organization's progenitors also started. So I find it fascinating that we passed the Clayton Act in 1913 and we set in motion 110 years ago the criminal conspiracy, which we now call the World Health Organization, 110 years later. And in violation of TIFU, or TEFU, I don't know even how to say it, the TFEU, the treaty allegedly for the functioning of the European Union, which I think needs to now be called the Treaty for the Dysfunctional European Cabal, Article 101 unambiguously lays out the conditions that this was never a public health anything. It was racketeering for the purpose of instilling terror to adapt the behavior of a population. Period. That's what it was. That's what it always was. And we can come up with every theoretical argument we want to make about things, but the problem, even with the theory that we had an outbreak of something, is falsifiable for the data from Zurich that shows us that in the year of the pandemic of the globe, life insurance companies paid $30 billion less in claims.
Now, sis, I want to stop you here.
Mm-hmm.
They paid less in claims, according to him. All right.
Right.
So how many deaths they claimed that we're having, there was some falsification, according to him. Now, he's done the research. Mm-hmm. I wasn't down there looking at the actuary. I didn't look at it. I wasn't working with the insurance company. But apparently they didn't pay too much more money than what they did the previous year. All right, let him continue. That's according to him. He has the numbers. He's the researcher.
Mm-hmm.
Now, if there's a medical professional or a social professional or anybody else who wants to debate that we could develop a virus cunningly that could find out your bank account, your insurance policy statements, and whether you're paid up on your premiums, that's a big ask. It turns out that the data is unambiguous. We did not have a pandemic. We had genocide. And we need to call it what it is. Next slide. When I say we planned it, let's make sure we understand exactly the not-so-fine print of the fine print. And I want to call your attention first to the right-hand column of the slide. This is the 2011 data that the World Health Organization, the Wellcome Trust, PATH, and the Gates Foundation did on their wonderful worldwide program for a malaria vaccine for children under the age of 6 months of age. And in their clinical trial, it's helpful to point out that they murdered 66 children in the vaccine group and then cunningly used the term control for a control group in which they murdered 28 children. Now, the reason I said murdered and the reason why I use that term is because it's exactly what it was, because it turns out that this control group was not a saline injection. It was not some sort of innocuous, innocent thing. It was actually a cocktail of other known pathogenic disease-carrying injections. The control group was known to kill people, and the experimental control group was actually theoretically maybe going to kill people. And what we did was we actually went ahead and murdered them all.
Now, I don't know if people understand that, you know, when they do a trial, they usually have what they call a blind study. In other words, they have two populations. One population they give the vaccine trial to, or whatever the medication is, and then they have another trial, have another group of people around the same number, who identically are the same as the people in the other group, and they usually give them a placebo. Mm-hmm. All right, and then they see, from that they see what the vaccine or the medicine that they're testing does in comparison to the placebo group that they just get some salt water to. But he's saying that
right. What
they gave the placebo group wasn't really placebo. It was other known medication that had harmed people. Mm-hmm. So they're trying to see how much more damage the vaccine would do to the already known medicine that would harm. And this is, he's got the data right here. He's got, you know, he's pointing it out. Now, you can't see this because you don't have the luxury of having this screen. I'm looking at my computer as he's talking.
Mm-hmm.
All right, but now this is the one thing that I want to, and then I'm gonna stop because it's important that what he mentions here regarding, and Fauci is in on this a little bit. All right, it's astonishing what these people will do to make money. I mean, it's pathetic.
Racketeering leading to murder and global terrorism. Next slide. I told you that the second thing after they plan it is they fund it. And why don't we use the criminals' language in their own words? Because it's the best way to say it. When they actually planned the release of the use of a biologically modified chimera associated with the model derived from coronavirus, they actually said the following: to sustain the funding base beyond the crisis, we need to increase the public understanding for the needful medical countermeasures such as a pan-influenza or pan-coronavirus vaccine. Now, let me pause for just one moment and remind you that the crisis that they were speaking of was a crisis of diminishing funding. There was no health crisis.
Now, this is what Ralph Barrick, who was the guy responsible for conducting these research, I want to read that again, what he just read off his slide. To sustain the funding, to keep the funding coming, all right?
Right.
Base, beyond the crisis, we need to increase public understanding of the need, all right, for medical countermeasures. That's interesting because that's usually a military term, such as a pan-influenza or a pan-corona vaccine, a coronavirus vaccine. In other words, just from that statement there, the concern was getting paid. You know how our brothers down in the hood say, yeah, I got to get paid. Mm-hmm. Evidently, these higher people want to get paid too.
They got to get paid.
This was
too,
a crisis,
right?
Of their coffers were starting to run dry. That's the crisis. And let's read on. A key driver is the media, and the economics will follow the hype. We need to use that hype to our advantage to get to the real issues. Investors will respond if they see profit at the end of the process.
All right, now this was made by the man, and unfortunately, I don't know why he made this in public, and it was published, and he got a hold of it. All right, and this was one of the researchers who was researching the coronavirus. Now, I want to stop there. That's all I have on these people, but I want to, my intent is to uncover what have we learned, that there was possible some people who planned this thing, and it went global, and it was well-coordinated. It was well-funded. All right, and they had a lot of people that was involved in doing this. All right, in fact, I know, you know, Dr. Velva Bowles. I think you've heard me talk to her on a couple of occasions. If you didn't, she had pointed this out. You know, because I was asking her, you know, when she was coming out, isn't there some black institutions that are aware of what these people are trying to do with this vaccine, and that that really this virus was really affecting people who had comorbidities. I mean, they were sick already, and mostly elderly. That was the top share of people that died from COVID, and now there's other people who died as a consequence of getting the vaccine. She says her colleagues were afraid to say anything. Not that they didn't know. They were afraid to say anything, all right, because of their jobs, you know, because
right, for sure.
That's what the regulatory people told them to be quiet. And, you know, we don't have anything to counter that, which is the reason for me bringing that up here. And we only got a few minutes, but I want to talk about the reason. We don't have a plan as to, see, we are in the United States. Majority of our people are populated in the southern states. All right. Almost an equal number of people are scattered throughout the country, particularly east, midwest, and then all the way over to the west. All right?
Mm-hmm.
We are scattered. And even in those centers where we happen to be the majority population or a large percentage of the population, we have no control. Now, that's important. We depend on the people who ancestors enslaved us. We depend on the businesses that have their legacy in slavery, all right, to be our rescuers. Now, does that make any sense?
No, not at all.
Sister Q, does that make any sense?
No, not at all.
No, it doesn't make
absolutely
any sense. But we depend on the people. We depend on the people, all right, who ancestors enslaved us. We depend on the people who businesses, the insurance company, the banks who funded slavery. We depend on the government who laid the policies which allowed slavery. We depend on them, all right, and expect them to do something different than what they did initially when they came over here, exterminate the Indians so that they could take over the land and then bring Africans and enslaved Africans who were here already, because, you know, Africans were here in the U.S. before Columbus came here and before the slave trade happened. So what they did was just conquer them, right, and then enslave them. So they went over to Africa, they went over to the U.S., enslaved us in both areas, conquered us in both areas, and then enslaved us, regardless of whether your ancestry might have started here in the states, well, it wasn't called states there, the Americas, or whether it was on the continent. And they brought you here, all right? And now we depend on them, all right, for our self-sustaining, our liberation, our determination, all of them. They throw funds into it. We have to have a plan, and we don't have a plan. That plan has to be inaugurated by us. It has to be, unfortunately, I'm saying this, and I know I'm going to hurt and step on some people's toes, funded by us. We have to take care of that plan, and we have to execute that plan. And executing that plan, we have to do this. We have to have measures in which we examine. We have to come back and evaluate those measures and make sure, you know, that we are in the right path, that we're not doing. None of the movements that I have take that into it. They have maybe have a 2-year strategic plan, a 5-year strategic plan, all right? And they might take the time to evaluate it, but usually they don't do it that well, because most people, when they try to evaluate the plan, they have become very personal with the plan, and they become self-conscious because they feel that it may make them appear that they're incompetent, even though they've been placed in the role of responsibility. So they don't say anything. All right, we have to get that mindset out of abandon that mindset. We need to throw that in the toilet, you know, because our life, these people are already, these are the doctors that you heard. They're not talking to black folks. They're talking to white folks.
Mm-hmm.
Right, they're talking to white folks. They're talking to white folks who have been hit, you know, by these scandals by their white brothers and cousins. All right. So what do you think they're talking of? We ain't. They're not talking. They're organizing. They're trying to organize against what the billion. The millionaires are trying to organize against the billionaires. All right. We're not even in the picture. We're not even being discussed. All right. We are of no concern. All right. Because we figure that we don't have the intellectual and mental capacity, or we're too scared. We're too scared because we're worried about, oh, they're going to take my Lincoln away from me. They're going to take my car away from me. They're going to take my job. All right. So this is the fear that we have, and it immobilizes us, and we can't do very much, all right, from that immobilization. All right. So the key is a plan that we are comfortable with that allows us not to feel impotent. All right. And so that plan must extend beyond the traditional 5-year strategic plan. It must go further than that. Let me just take the area of health, because that was my initial topic. If you talk about health and wellness, let's take a look at it. Let's break it down a little bit. What do you have to have in that industry? Well, you have to have the medical professionals. You know, you got a doctor on every corner, all right? You have to have medical specialists. All right, so you go to your primary care doctor. Your primary care doctor say, you know, he sees or she sees you for 15 minutes. All right, and say, yeah, you need the specialist. All right, you go to the specialist, all right, who sees you for 15 minutes or hook you up to machines. All right, now they hook you up to machines. Who pays for the energy that runs the machines and the machines that are built? So you got to worry about the machines, the energy that's necessary to worry about the machine, the skills that is necessary, all right, in order to run the machine and to be able to analyze the data that come from the machine. That's the health care that you have to have. Are we in control of that? I don't think so.
No.
What else do you need to worry about?
Not at all.
The medical, yes, the medical supplies, all right, which include the pharmaceuticals, all right, the gloves that you got to wear, you know, you put on your hand when you're doing the examination. We don't make that. In fact, we don't even know really if those latex gloves, you know, if they're maybe damaging to our skin. We don't know. All right.
Exactly.
The machinery. Exactly. The machinery. All right. That doesn't cost, you know, a pretty penny. That's what it costs. The equipment, and that includes the robot. That's expensive, and AI, that's expensive stuff that you have to consider. What about the research and development staff that you have to hire? All right, to be able to do the test that is run. That's part of your healthcare system. Do we control that? What about the buildings? Who builds the hospitals? Who builds the clinics? Do we control that?
I don't.
How do we know what they put in those clinics? How do we know what we put? We don't control that. All right, well, let's go down to food. You got to supply the hospital, don't you? Do we supply the food? You say, yeah, we do supply the food. We might eat the food. We don't even know what's in the food, all right? But that's part
of
it. Now, what about the medical, I mean, what about the management of medical waste? Do we take care of that?
Mm-mm.
No, we ain't got nothing to do with that. That's part of the healthcare system. So what do we need to concern ourselves with? If that's the healthcare system and it's not benefiting us, then we have to, and we got the UBCs, right? The best model that I've seen is the UBC. But the UBCs got to realize the task before them. The task before them, and I'm just speaking of healthcare. I'm not speaking of anything else. They have to know this. They have to be able to identify the industries associated with healthcare and then how to take that over. You getting my picture, sister?
Yes, for sure. Or how to create something, a substitute for that, that is going to benefit
us. That's the main thing. Hey, to create the substitute, but to create the substitute, you got to know what's there and why it's not serving the purpose. All right.
Exactly.
Are we doing that? Is black folks doing that? Okay, all right.
Not that I know of.
All right, that's the challenge before us, and we're not doing it because we don't have a plan. All right. In other words, where we have a potential outcome, and the potential outcome that we have should be the control of the healthcare industry, all right, because the current healthcare industry is not serving our needs. It's causing our death, and it's exploitative because people are profiting off of it. That's the task before us. And my task, if I see this, is to raise the apocalypse, uncover. If I see this,
right,
to uncover and share so that we can collectively try to do something, all right, to stop the tragedy that we see happening and do the same thing, all right, to liberate ourselves. We have to sustain our health, all right? We have to prevent, get in a mindset to prevent the diseases, all right? And then to fortify our bodies such that it resists being infected with diseases. And, of course, if we do preventative and we are flourishing, then we can work wholeheartedly in the industries that we have and then which will benefit our people. This is the task before us. These are the tasks before the UBCs that we create. And I'm just only here talking about healthcare. I haven't talked about anything else.
Sister, I
really appreciate I guess we didn't get any calls, but I appreciate you giving me the time to, again, share some information with the family. Again, family, you get this information, you can look up online the people that I talked about earlier. I showed clips on. That's Martin, that's Dr. McCullough, that's Dr. Bucart, and Dr. Lindsay. All right, and look at their testimonies. They'll provide it right there. They'll show you some documents. At least Dr. McCullough and Dr. Martin will show you some documents. They're not talking to us. They're talking to white folks. And so we're just a passing dream, a glimpse. All right. We have to take it upon ourselves to get the information and move forward with it.
Thank you very much, Brother Shabaka. We appreciate you bringing this information to us. It's, as you say, vital information that most of us are not even thinking about. We also want to thank everyone that joined us for this evening. We invite you to join us again next Thursday evening at 9 p.m. Eastern Time for another installment of Dare to Win. Peace.
Peace.
After you've done all you've done.